Praise the Lord and Pass the Popcorn. Faith-based movies such as Son of God, God's Not Dead, and Heaven is for Real are currently cleaning up at the box office and bringing in droves of eager viewers at a time when some movie theaters struggled to get people to come in. Is Hollywood finally responding to an underserved demographic, or is this trend due to other forces? Are movies expanding the base of the church or only preaching to the choir? What do you think? On the next Central Standard, the film critics return to review a number of movies that have been released over the last month or so, and we'll also examine the faith-based movie phenomenon. Join in on the conversation with me, Russ Simmons, and my fellow film critics on the next Central Standard. That's coming up right after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Praise the Lord and pass the popcorn.
Amen.
Faith-based movies are making a noise at the box office, and that's just one of the things we're going to be talking about today on Central Standard. Welcome. My name is Russ Simmons, sitting here in the host seat today. I'm with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM, and I'm joined on the panel today by...
Good morning. It's Marie Asner with PhantomToeBooth.org and OnAirPrep.com.
And I'm John Tibbetts. I teach film at the University of Kansas.
And we're going to be talking about a number of the films that have opened up over the last month or so in the Kansas City area and letting you know our take, and we want to hear your take as well. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about the faith-based movie phenomenon. We're going to be joined by one of our fellow film critics, Phil Boatwright, who reviews films from a Christian perspective, and he's going to give us his ideas on why this trend has become what it is today. But before we do that, we're going to jump right in and talk about some of the contemporary movies that are doing well at the box office right now, and we want you to join in on the conversation by giving us a call at 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. We want to hear from you. Just let us know what you think. Is there something that you've seen you'd like to recommend to your fellow listeners, or is there something you want to have them avoid? Is there something that was a real stinker you'd like to let us know? Well, give us a call. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. And the number one film at the box office right now really is a summer release that got a very early take on the box office. It's Captain America, The Winter Soldier. Marie?
Oh, this is top box office. I think it had the biggest opening for what, its month or its day, I mean, whoever keeps track of all the statistics. And the cast has probably signed on for at least 17 sequels because it could go on forever with all the villains he's had in the comic books. This is Marvel Comics Strikes Again. We've got Chris Evans, who inhabits the role of Captain America, the guy who is brought back from the past, living in the present. And it's kind of interesting because he's out in the modern world, and yet when you go into his apartment, it's like 1945, 1950. And he still has some adjustment problems with the time span in there. In this film, he meets the Winter Soldier. Now, maybe someone can enlighten me on where Winter Soldier came from. I'm not that familiar with this villain, but it's played nicely by Sebastian Stan, who wears a mask most of the time until you actually find out who he is. There's some secrets in this film that are revealed, and I will add to please sit through the screen credits on this movie. It's a little bit long, but then there's more to it there. Scarlett Johansson is the Black Widow, and it's the yin and yang between she and Captain America because he is straightforward, honest, and she comes along with sarcastic little comments, and she's just kind of below the law and different areas, like she would rather hit somebody where he would rather talk to them, things like that. Motorcycles play a lot in here, and there's a nice part where the captain is a little uncomfortable in his modern outfit, so he goes into the Smithsonian quietly when nobody's supposed to see him and gets his 1950s or 1940s outfit and from then on wears it. And I liked that. There are some good moments in here. And there's a sympathetic part where there's a time difference where he visits a friend from the past. I won't give anything away. And he has not aged, but this person has. And I liked the way that was handled. I'm going to give this 3 stars.
John?
Yeah, and there's some maybe unexpected resonance or gravitas in the later scenes. I won't explain how necessarily, but it gives the good captain a chance to demonstrate loyalty over bloodthirsty revenge. And we're not used to maybe seeing that sort of thing very often, but it fits the good Captain Stalwart character. I love the way that even an earthbound character like Captain America gets a chance to fly around. My friends always laugh at me because anytime somebody starts flying in a movie, I am there. It must have been from seeing Peter Pan as just a kid. But the high wire thrills are especially effective, special effects or however they are done. And so it's a grand entertainment film. I think it fully deserves the box office that it's been getting. And I certainly will give it 3.5
stars. Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, this is first rate for the style of movie it is. You know, you're not expected to, go for Oscar nominations with a movie like this. But it's still a lot of good, clean fun. And the only nitpicky problem I had with it, I thought it was too long. And and therefore was a bit draggy, but it's first-rate popcorn entertainment. So I'm going to give it a 3.5 as well, and that's Captain America: The Winter Soldier, and that's rated PG-13. And as I said, it's doing gangbusters at the box office. But let's shift gears and talk about one that maybe is a little bit disappointing at the box office, and that is Draft Day. You know, from Bull Durham to Field of Dreams and Tin Cup, Kevin Costner is known for his sports movies, and so you would have thought that there would have been an eager audience for Draft Day, which is a sports movie, although, albeit there's no sports actually in it. It's about front office politics, and it's a like an old Hollywood backstage drama, but this time the drama takes place in the offices at NFL football teams. Costner plays the GM of the Cleveland Browns. He does some nifty negotiation while juggling some professional and personal problems. You know, it's very manipulative and obvious, but it's also surprisingly involving. You don't need to be a football fan to enjoy it, but I think it helps, and I'll probably give it 3
well,
stars.
There are really two especially amazing aspects of this film. One, of course, is that it's about a subject that would seem to be tailored more to sports geeks, the football draft, which is almost upon us, by the way. But it is made to be so entertaining and so character-driven that I don't think anybody would have any problems figuring out what's going on. And instead, it's a lot of fun, and you have that kind of dry, sort of deadpan delivery with Costner that always works for me. The second thing is, you would think that a film depending mostly upon dialogue maybe would be faltering in pace, but not really. The use of split screens in this film is very unusual. We're used to seeing images multiple side by side, but these interconnect. I don't know that I've ever quite seen that, if that's Ivan Reitman's idea or who, but it makes the dialogue sequences especially come alive. And Chiefs fans, you'll get a good shot of Arrowhead and an actor playing the Chiefs general manager, along with several other football teams, so we are represented in the film. I thought it was solid entertainment. Again, 3.5 for me.
And Marie?
Oh, I like this film very much, and I'm surprised that it is not doing well at the box office. Kevin Costner, as John said, has a poker face, and this is a combination poker game and chess game with what goes on behind the scenes, and also against a stopwatch, actually. It's the NFL draft, and you have 10 minutes to choose your person or make your moves, and it really goes down to the wire. And I thought that was exciting, and people may not realize that this is what happens. But the Jennifer Gardner role in here as the manager, I thought could have been done by anyone. She just kind of walks out with 5-inch heels, and how she stands in that, I don't know. It gives her statistics and then walks back again. And there's a little secret in there about her, but I'm not going to give anything away. But anyone could have done that role, I think. But the entire supporting cast is very well, and they support Costner in his role. And whenever there's a decision to be made, the camera pans around, and you start picking up people that you recognize. I saw Dave Ramsey from television's Arrow as one of the main characters there. Now, he plays a tough guy there, but here he was a sympathetic character, and I thought, wow, you know, I kind of like this. Eileen Brennan as the mother was another role that was probably written in, I think, for sympathy, but I'm not taking that away from this.
And Ellen Burstyn.
Ellen Burstyn, I'm sorry. The humor part about this is an intern. We have to have something to laugh at, so we've got the new intern. But also, Sean Combs trying to act is another part that is a bit humorous. So I'm giving Draft Day a good solid 3.
Yep, I think that we can all agree that it's definitely worth seeing. And even if you're not a football fan, as I said, but that's Draft Day, and it's rated PG-13. We'll give it a cumulative 3 out of 5 stars. Let's shift gears and go to the art house for just a moment and talk about a film that I understand is the language might be a bit colorful for some people. It's called Dom Hemingway.
I've been waiting all week to have a go at this. I thought Dom Hemingway gave me the most fun I have had in a movie theater in a long, long time. Jude Law is out of control, and he's got a rant that runs from the beginning of the movie to the end. He's a convict just out of jail. There's a lot of money owed to him by a crime boss. He's trying to collect. Mayhem on all sides, mostly initiated by Dom Hemingway. It is funny, it's raunchy, it's nasty, and it's gory.
Wow.
How all of those elements somehow can come together, to me, is a minor miracle, because you are laughing at the same time that you're wincing and probably being annoyed, you know? Mm-hmm. Because that's what Dom is all about. He's got a mouth on him that's almost Shakespearean in its rhetorical effect. And it's endless, it's nonstop. I've seen some reviews where people complain about this. I'm puzzled because that is the character. Jude Law runs and controls every scene that he's in. I think a lot of people have been waiting for a breakout role from him. I mean, we know him, but this kind of role is so gritty and so bizarre by turns that you can't look away from the screen. However, I would warn you, after the opening monologue, you will know whether or not you even want to stay in the theater or not. Marie's nodding her head here. It's not exactly church material, is it, Marie?
Oh, definitely not.
No, but it's unbelievable. It reminded me a little bit of the opening monologue that Johnny Depp has in The Libertine, in which you know what you're in for. So take it or leave it, buddy. Well, I took it to the hilt. I think Dom Hemingway is a terrific picture. I hope it does well. I see it still hanging around. Highest rating for this one.
And that is
well,
a
are
five.
Are we going 4 or 5?
Yeah, five stars.
Yeah.
All right. Marie?
Well,
yeah, Marie.
Within the first 5 minutes, I would say stand at the back of the theater and decide whether you want to go and find a seat or else walk out. And but this is the type of film that you admire the actor for playing the role, but you despise the character that he's doing. And it's really a play in 6 parts. It's about a person who has done time for his boss. He spent 12 years in prison, took the rap for his boss. His time is up. He's gone out. He's going to collect his money. And it's like that's scene one. We have scene two, scene three. And when you go in that way and you come to the end of it, it's like the whole thing was padded, like this could be done in an hour rather than like an hour and a half. The supporting cast is fine. Richard E. Grant plays Jude Law's companion, except I was wondering, what if you switched the roles and you had Richard E. Grant, who usually plays the villain as, you know, not the good guy, but the villain here, and Jude Law is the sidekick, to switch that out, if this film would have that effect or not. There's a little bit of a sympathy for him in trying to connect
absolutely.
With his daughter,
yeah.
But it seems like the money is also the target. When he gets paid, everybody's after the money, and that's where the violence comes in, so it's a violent film. I'm going to give it 2 for Jude Law's portrayal of the character.
There are set pieces in this that I think are destined to be classics. For example, very quickly, he's a renowned safecracker. There's a bet as to whether or not he can open this particular safe. If he fails, it's bad news for him. Watching his technique for opening this safe is maybe the funniest thing I've seen all year. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay,
I was just going to say, let's just say that he's pretty handy with a sledgehammer.
Once again, that's Dom Hemingway, rated R, apparently earns that rating. Since we're going to be talking about faith-based movies in the second half, I take it this is not one of the titles we'll be chatting about.
Although it's a character that achieves a kind of redemption.
Okay.
I'm going to use that word intentionally, and I'm not calling him a villain, Marie. I think this is a protagonist with the emphasis on pro.
I would say no redemption there, John.
Okay. All right. So that's Dom Hemingway, rated R. You are listening to Central Standard, and I'm Russ Simmons with my fellow movie critics, John Tibbetts and Marie Asner. We're talking about movies that have come out over the last month or so. And we'll also in the second half be talking about the faith-based movie phenomenon. And if you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call at 816-235-2888 or send us a tweet at KCUR-CST. You can also contact us through our Facebook page. Quickest way, 816-235-2888. And let's go ahead and move on to another film that's kind of disappointing at the box office. It's starring Johnny Depp, who usually is a sure thing when it comes to the box office. And it's a film called Transcendence.
Well, it's amazing how dull he is. I guess he's supposed to be playing a scientist who really isn't very much connected with the rest of the world. He's in his own little world of science, math, and whatnot. But instead of dying at the hands of an eco-terrorist, he manages to have himself uploaded into a computer wherein, in classic Gothic tradition style, he suddenly decides he's going to rule the universe. It's a Gothic film all the way, and you can watch it really as a textbook for all of these themes of the Frankensteinian creation who then rises up and threatening to kill the creator, and, you know, we have man's ambition to go where God has forbidden us to go, etc. All of that's working throughout the film, but I found it funnier than I might have thought. You've got Morgan Freeman playing Morgan Freeman, who stands around and doesn't do a thing. Yes. It's really interesting.
Collecting a check.
And you've got all kinds of unexplained things going on, like some kind of a substance that springs up from the ground that will recreate things that have been killed, dead, annihilated, and destroyed. I'm referring to sequences in which the world's armed forces are trying to overthrow Johnny Depp and his transcendental ambitions. Transcendence, I think that's the only transcendental thing going on, is the ambition of the film, which I think falters because we don't care about the characters. I think the true chilling horror of a machine gone amok somehow is never really followed through on. And it might have helped if Depp could have given a little bit more of his trademark weirdness.
Yeah.
He's so banal in this thing. It's just a kind of hollow spot in the middle of the movie.
Right.
Two is the best I could do.
Well, he is dead.
Well,
so to speak.
What does dead mean in this movie?
Marie?
Well, I have a little different twist on this. I look upon this as basically a love story between two people, two scientists. And it's not giving anything away but saying that he dies within the first 5 minutes because every trailer out there about this movie shows that. And so his wife, played by Rebecca, Rebecca Hall, they have this intense love with each other. And there's a twist at the end, and if you catch it at the beginning, you know where this film is going. And if you miss it, then the ending might be just kind of a surprise for you. All the way through, Paul Bettany is another person who is a good actor, but he kind of stands around and emotes as a friend, and Morgan Freeman. But the two are trying to, she's trying to preserve Depp, and with all the intelligence is there, I was surprised where there was something at the bottom of the screen that says 2 years later, and they're still working on this project. You know, you'd think it would be almost instantaneous. There was a movie that came out in the 70s called The Forbin Project with Eric Braeden, about the giant computer, and I thought this was going to be a remake of that. It almost goes in that direction. The special effects are fairly good, but I think it lost its way. It didn't know exactly where to go, but I'm looking at it more as a love story that kind of failed in that attempt, so I'm going to say 2.5.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. 2.5 for Transcendence, rated PG-13. You know, this is a movie that, had a great premise. The premise is so compelling that it should have made a really compelling film. But as you mentioned, like Colossus, the Forbin Project from the 70s and Demon Seed from the 70s, these are two films that dealt with pretty much the same topic, same theme. But the contemporary special effects, which I thought were great in this movie, really don't improve it. You know, those ideas could have been handled so much more simply and better.
How much more effective it was for Kubrick's HAL, the computer in 2001, where we see a computer now who's gone mad and wants to take over, and all we see is just is a red light and a voice. No special effects, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But how much more chilling
true
those scenes with Hal were in that film
good
than what we have here.
Right, I agree. So that's 2.5, let's say, for Transcendence out of 5, PG-13, and interesting premise, execution, not so much. Once again, you're listening to KCUR, and this is Central Standard. 816-235-2888 is the number. Someone did call in. Joe from Leavenworth wants to know what we know about the movie Railway Man. Well, we're going to be talking about that right now. I'm just going to jump right ahead and talk about Railway Man. This is a film that's based upon a very popular book. It's an autobiography of a man named Eric Lomax, who was a British prisoner during the Second World War, who was tortured by his Japanese captors. And many years later, he's suffering from post-traumatic stress and has been suffering from the memories of that ordeal. And with the encouragement of his wife, played by Nicole Kidman, Eric Lomax, played by Colin Firth, decides to go and confront his Japanese tormentor, who's still alive. And that is the premise from which this movie hangs. And what a great one. I mean, this is a really compelling story, but unfortunately, the execution is kind of flat-footed. We have two Oscar winners, Colin Firth and Nicole Kidman, who are both, you know, excellent actors. But the pacing undermines the film. Great sequences from the early years during the war that are reenacted in Colin Firth's memory, and the subject matter obviously is compelling, but I'm only going to be able to give it 3, mainly based on the quality of the production and the acting, but the sluggish pace is what really does it in. It does build to an effective emotional climax, but it's sort of like never quite builds up enough steam, if you will, and that's The Railway Man, and it's rated R, mainly for the violence during the war sequences that are involved. Let's move ahead real quickly and talk about something completely different. Marie, fill us in on Rio 2.
Oh, Rio 2. This is a colorful sequel to the first Rio of a couple of years ago with the same voice, Jesse Eisenberg as Blue Spix Macabre, I think, or Spix Blue Macabre, one of the rarest birds in the world, who finds a mate named Jewel. They live in Rio, and now we're a few years later, and they have three little hatchlings, and they've discovered that there are more of these birds in the Amazon, so they decide to take a trip to the Amazon. Now, Blue has been raised as a human, and
of course,
he does everything in a human way, and it's a riot to see him packing, because the rest of the birds just get up and they're going to fly away and they're going to pick up some nuts and fruits on the way. He's got a fanny pack, he's got a Swiss Army knife, he's putting pancake mix in there so that he can do pancakes when they get to their destination. And of course, we have a villain, and here it happens to be the developers and the people who chop down trees. And you know who they are because they all have beards and tattoos all over. And as soon as you see an arm with a tattoo on it, attached to that is going to be an axe or something like that. So those are the villains. And the main theme is family and also to preserve the forest. And I think they do that very well. The music is not, I think, as colorful. Well, I shouldn't say the word colorful. It's bouncy. As trippingly to the tongue as Frozen is, and the music from that. But it serves its purpose well. But it's the supporting characters. Now, we have a bulldog who drools all over. You know, what's a little drool between friends? And played by Tracy Morgan. I mean, he's a side character, and you kind of wait for him. But the big one is a cockatoo named Nigel. And let's see, I think I have the name of the actor who plays. I guess I don't have the actor who plays it, but he does it in a British accent, and he does Shakespeare. And he is the villain because he's also after the person who clipped his wings, and he does it so nicely. It's almost a film that you want to see twice because of the color around it and also about the characters, but it does go on for almost 2 hours, and there is some frightening scenes when those people start chopping those trees down and there's, you know, animals in peril and so on. So I'd say be aware of children under the age of 5, perhaps, for this film. But certainly 3.5 stars.
Wow, really? Because I had a completely different take, Marie. I enjoyed the first film, Rio. You know, I thought it was colorful, as you said. Music, I enjoyed. The premise was kind of fresh. This one just seemed to be a rehash to me. There was nothing original, nothing that I took away from the film that gave me any sense that I'd seen anything but basically a redo of the first film. So I like the music in particular. As a matter of fact, there's a local connection there. The great Janelle Monáe adds to some of the music. The graduate of, I believe it's one of the Wyandotte school system, probably one of our listeners knows which school that she went to. But Janelle Monáe has really made quite a mark for herself. Other than that, you know, I just found it bland. So I'm only going to be able to give it a 2. So with your 3.5 and my 2, we'll average it out to a 3 for Rio 2 rated G.
And I wanted to add, too, at the very beginning of this, there's a 5-minute short called Almost Home. And it's about a group of aliens that have 6 legs and you know, like 5 hands and so on. And they're drifting around looking for a home. And it's done cleverly. And you can almost figure out where home is going to end up being. And so I just bet you that when it comes time for the Oscar shorts next year, that this little film is probably going to be included in one of them.
That could be a synopsis for Under the Skin.
Yes, it
just
could.
About.
We had a call from Bill from Overland Park who was talking about the meeting about Metcalf South last night. As some of you may know, there was an open public meeting about what to do with that property, which brings into question what might happen to the Glenwood Arts Theater complex there, which is one of, you know, really the standout art houses. We certainly don't want to lose that property.
No.
And I understand there's going to be another meeting on Tuesday. And let me see if I can get that information on that at the Matt Ross Community Center. That's once again next Tuesday. So if you want to throw in your 2 cents about what should be done with that property, there's your opportunity. So we certainly want to make sure that the Glenwood Arts survives.
Absolutely.
And
definitely.
You brought up Under the Skin. Before we take a break, we're going to very quickly cover Under the Skin. John?
Well, one of the strangest films you will see all year. You may be lured into it with the enticing erotic images of Scarlett Johansson. Well, there's a little of that, but you quickly get the idea that this is a woman on the prowl, and she is seducing, I think, particular men she meets on the streets of Edinburgh. She takes them back to what appears to be her home, and then they disappear. That's interesting. But it's the second half of the film where we begin to realize that this is really a person who is a kind of alien presence. We're not sure. And maybe she or it is trying to understand what it is to be human. And now we've got a real movie on our hands. Now, unfortunately, Scarlett Johansson spends a good deal of time just staring off into space for prolonged periods of time. But there is a wonderful payoff at the end. And I recommend you give this one a shot. I'm going to give it 3.5.
Marie?
Okay, I would say the film is not worth the effort, but it's from a novel by Michael Faber, and I would suggest perhaps reading the novel, which I have not done. There might be a little bit more substance to this. Just for time short, I'm going to just give it 1.5.
Wow, I guess I'm going to split the difference between the two of you. I thought it was a really interesting film. I thought there are long, boring stretches, which are kind of, in some way, a killer for a lot of people. I understand that. But there are also moments of brilliance. Mm-hmm. It's punctuated with moments that were just almost jaw-dropping.
Too. Interesting music.
Very interesting, very creepy, eerie. This is a movie that will definitely creep you out. And that's the obviously part of the intention. I was mentioning to John earlier as we were talking before the show that in some ways it reminds me of the work of Stanley Kubrick. There are a lot of shots and a lot of techniques that are very Kubrick-like. So if you're a fan of Stanley Kubrick, this might be a movie you want to try.
And my response was, I think it's better.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Marie?
Kubrick fans out there are outraged.
Scarlett Johansson supposedly took a van and went through the streets of Glasgow trolling for guys as in preparation for this film. And I think if somebody was following her with a camera and did a documentary, it would be better than this movie.
Actually, some of it is captured. Some of those actual scenes are in the movie. That's right. Okay. Well, I'm going to give it a 3. And so Marie gives it a 1.5, and John gives it a
3.5.
Let's call it a 2.5 then for Under the Skin. Rated R, and yes, it does earn that R
and
rating.
And you do find out what is Under the Skin.
Yes, you certainly do. We're going to take a short break now, but when we return, we'll be talking about faith-based movies and that new trend in Hollywood. And we'll also be sharing a few announcements in the movie world in the Kansas City area. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Russ Simmons, and I'm joined by my fellow film critics today, Marie Asner and John Tibbetts. We're talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so. And also, we're going to be talking about the faith-based movie phenomena. Is it a real trend, or is it just an anomaly? We'll be joined by Phil Boatwright, who's a local film critic and also writes for Christian media outlets throughout the country. But before we do that, we're going to be quickly telling about a few announcements And first of all, the Tivoli Performing Arts Series will continue with a movie called Now in the Wings of a World Stage featuring Kevin Spacey and local actor Nathan Darrow. And this is about Spacey and his work with the production of Richard III in Great Britain. And he worked with his collaborator on American Beauty, Sam Mendes, on this production. And so that will be April 20th at 7:30. And also the Royal Opera's production of Nabucco will be Thursday, May 15th at 1 p.m. And you can find out more information on these at kcur.org. Also, the Fine Arts Group is continuing their Europe and the Holocaust film series with a film from Austria and Germany from 2007 called The Counterfeiters. That's going to be on May 13th at 7 p.m. at the Leawood Theater. The Alamo Drafthouse is celebrating villains in a big way with a series about called Birth, Movies, and Death, a magazine centered on monthly programming at the Alamo Drafthouse, looking at some of the great villains of all time. So they'll be having screenings of movies like Sleeping Beauty and also The Wizard of Oz. You know, so when you think of the great villains, the Alamo Drafthouse is going to celebrate those. And once again, you find out more information at kcur.org. Also, the Screenland Armor is presenting Lars von Trier's controversial Nymphomaniac Volumes 1 and 2. They are unrated for obvious reasons, starring Shia LaBeouf, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Willem Dafoe, Stellan Skarsgård, and that caused quite a stir at the Cannes Film Festival. It opens today at the Screenland Armor, and again, more information at kcur.org. And the Italian Film Festival USA of Kansas City is April 25th through the 27th. And they're offering some different titles, including The Best Offer, White as Milk, Red as Blood, and The Red and the Blue. These are free films. You can find out more information at italianfilmfests.org, and we'll try to get something up on our website about that as well.
You mentioned Charlotte Gainsbourg. Mm-hmm. Marie and I were talking earlier about what happened to Charlotte Gainsbourg. We see her in Jane Eyre as a very well-behaved young lady with a touch of rebelliousness, as befits the character. Since then, she's hooked up with Lars von Trier, Antichrist, things like this. What in the world is going on there? So you're going to see a Charlotte Gainsbourg that's quite different from Jane Eyre, I'll tell you that.
Yes, indeed. To put it mildly.
Yeah. We're talking about beneath the skin, beneath the Jane Eyre is...
Well... You look at the lineup at the box office, you see titles like Son of God, you see God's Not Dead, you see Heaven is for Real, and these are all films that are doing really, really well. Is this a trend? Is this a phenomenon of its own, or is it just an anomaly? Well, we're joined now by our fellow film critic, Phil Boatwright. And Phil, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Russ. It's a great privilege to be here with both of you, all three of you. I'll get my tongue to working here in a minute.
And could you tell us some of the outlets that where we can hear your work?
Yeah, I'm writing for Preview Online and Baptist Press and, of all places, Clash Entertainment, which is aimed at teenagers. And when the gentleman came to me and said, we'd like you to write reviews for us, I said, you do know how old I am, right? And, yeah, but I don't want anybody writing down to the kids. And so we don't.
Before we move on, I just wanted to quickly say we had a call, someone asking about films that are scripted for the blind. We don't really know which theaters in town are doing that, but I know that our callers do. So I'm going to throw that out there. If anyone wants to give us a call and let us know about theaters that are accommodating the blind and how they do that, that'd be great. 816-235-2888. And Marie?
I do believe that AMC 30 in Olathe has at least one theater that's equipped. It's a special headpiece that you have to ask for at the box office.
Right. Okay. And if you know of any other places that do that, we'd be grateful to hear from you. So once again, the number is 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. Send us a note on Facebook. And also, if you want to join in on the conversation about faith-based movies. So, Phil, my question to you right off the bat is, do you think this is a trend? Are we seeing a sea change? Or is this simply an anomaly?
Well, I've been trying to analyze that, too, and I'm really not sure. I think because of the insecurity of the times that we're living in, people are searching for something more than what they're getting out of most films. And I think Hollywood is finally kind of kicking into that, kind of realizing that there is an audience out there and that there are people who are searching for something other than the concept that we are just mental and physical beings. I think they are beginning to realize that we are a spiritual being as well. And so I think filmmakers are trying to find their way with that. And I think the modern day Christian filmmaker is kind of stumbling along mm-hmm. the way. John had mentioned something about that earlier when we were coming in, that the Cecil B. DeMille films and so on had a true impact. But I think it was also because of along with their grandeur, they had they were very visual. And sometimes filmmakers, when they have a cause or a message, they tend to present that message as if they were preaching a sermon.
Yeah.
And you have to remember, it's a visual art form. I don't think there's been any film that has affected me more spiritually than The Tree of Life, the Terrence Malick film a couple of years ago, or Life of Pi, or even Gravity, because they're not trying to preach sermons at you, but they are raising the question, is there something more to our life here?
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember so often hearing from the pulpit, stay away from Hollywood movies, they're bad for you. Whereas today we're hearing, go support the ones that are good for you. And that seemed to be almost a very different set of, very different attitude and very different set of instructions coming from the pulpit.
Well, and I'd like to put in a plug for Minister Robert Lee Hill of Community Christian Church on the Plaza. He has a radio show on another station, Religion Between the Lines, and he regularly talks about films, not in a dismissive manner at all. He's willing to sift through what's out there and to serve notice to his listeners of many of the films, really, that will be of interest to them on the terms that Phil is talking about. So Robert Lee Hill is certainly one church father out there who is very affirmative about dealing with movies.
Marie?
In my other life, and I think this is known to many of our listeners, I'm also a church musician. And in my career, whenever I've been a substitute, I've always let them know that in my other life, I am a film critic. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't matter. But the 10th time, someone will politely say, could I have the name of another substitute? In other words, the film is not, film critic is not acceptable. Hmm. And I would provide that name for them to find someone else.
Interesting.
But it's that kind of narrowness of attitude that I would hope that faith-based films could take on confront. Right, Phil?
I feel sorry for Hollywood filmmakers because we Christians are not always an easy crowd to please. There's 200 Christian denominations, and we tend to want to argue about every little thing. And also, you have to be aware that there's sometimes a reason why they're a little bit leery of Hollywood. Hollywood is not always that friendly to Christians and to conservatives, and so. Sometimes they kind of feel up against the wall.
Yeah.
But we've had a couple of films here lately. Heaven is for Real. That really touched me. And again, one of the moments that touched me the most in that film is there's a moment where the lady asked for people to pray for their little boy. Their little boy is being operated on, and they're afraid that he's going to die. And so all of a sudden there's this montage where you see people across the community, across the town, praying. There'll be a fireman, or there's this old man with his little grandson. And that image of seeing people praying for somebody, maybe even somebody they don't even know, I thought that was very effective. And as I was watching it, I also thought, gee, I wonder how many people out there don't really understand what prayer is really all about. They haven't been brought up in the church. In fact, that reminds me, in Gravity, mm-hmm. at one point she says, I don't know how to pray. No one ever taught me. And I kind of wondered if seeing that image up there might raise questions for some people about what is this really all about? I don't think it's necessarily Hollywood's position to preach.
Although in the case of Heaven is Real, the filmmaker has been interviewed, and he is right out there saying, yes, I am proselytizing in this film.
Yeah. And that's certainly the case with God's Real.
But it comes across.
God's Not Dead, excuse me.
It comes across, though, as legitimate, and I think it helps to have somebody like Greg Kinnear, who's very sincere, very vulnerable, and very truthful in his work. And so he takes some of those lines that could be rather clumsy, and he brings a real truth to it, a real sincerity to them.
Right. That's good. There's an outstanding cast in that movie. Mm-hmm. Thomas Hayden Church and Margot Martindale. These are really good actors, and it's very well produced. So this is not like a cheap knockoff movie that was made by some church on video and in a back lot somewhere.
I think that's the power of it, and I wish a lot of Christian filmmakers, and I can say this, I worked in that realm in my youth. I did 12 films for the church market. And it's literally that's where they were shown, was in the church, and hopefully they're all destroyed by now. But if the thing you have to realize whenever you have a message is you have to get people involved in your story, and you have to get them to care about your character. Nobody learned that better than Jane Fonda when she was proselytizing her political views in movies in the 70s. She made sure that you got involved in the story and that you cared about her character. Then you were receptive to her message. And I think that has to come across a little more in some of these Christian films.
Well, I went to see a matinee of God's Not Dead on a Monday at 1:10 in the afternoon. I thought I'd probably be the only person there. It wasn't completely full, but there were a lot of people there. And that brings up the question about how these films are being marketed. I had a feeling probably that a church put together a group, said, we really feel like this is a film we should support. Let's take the bus and go see it. Do you see that happening a lot?
Yeah, I've heard of that. And I think it's an okay thing because, when I see films like that, I don't necessarily need to be preached to. I've been brought up in the church. I make Bible study a part of my daily life. I don't need a sermon every time I see a film, but it is rather confirming when you see a film that promotes certain subjects that you agree with or that you can take some lessons from. And so I think that's what they're trying to do, but they're also bringing friends and relatives who may not be part of the faithful, and hopefully it's witnessing to them.
Once again, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. The number to call is 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST.
John? Some of these issues are where you find them. We did not have a chance to talk about the movie Joe.
Well, we can jump
Nicolas
right in and
Cage,
talk about it now.
Because Joe, in his character, and believe me, this is a raunchy film with some of the most low-life characters in it you'll ever see in rural Mississippi. But Joe is the centerpiece. Very much, I think, it's not a stretch to see him as a bit of a Christ-like figure. And if you can handle the raunch of the film, the grit of that film, you'll see that at its core is a very ennobling kind of message between a man and a young boy. And so, no preaching there at all, but I think embedded in the material is the kind of stuff Phil's talking about.
Mm-hmm. And how many stars would you give
Joe? Oh, I'd give Joe 4.
All right. Yeah.
There was a film a few years ago called Zazi.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
sure.
That had a very redemptive message in it. And again, you wouldn't say that it was preaching by any means, but it was definitely a message there. I take away from certain films like Places in the Heart, where there's a visual of a wife forgiving her husband for his infidelity. And it takes place in a church just as a minister is preaching. And all of a sudden you see her take his hand. And you can tell that there's a forgiveness coming on there. And it's symbolic that it's taking place in a church, letting people know that something spiritual has happened to help her get through this. Schindler's List has the same thing. There's a scene in there. And just the fact that you see this image on the screen where this man comes to his wife in a church and apologizes for the wrongdoing and saying it's not going to happen again. it's very symbolic and very powerful.
Since we touched on Heaven is for Real, let's go ahead and give it a rating. Marie, out of 5 stars, what would you give it?
3.5.
And how about you, Phil?
I'd give it 4.
Okay, I'm going to give it a 3, so we're going to say 3.5 for Heaven is for Real. And what about God's Not Dead? Now, this is a film, you know, a lot of the messages, as Phil has pointed out, are kind of soft-pedaled in a lot of these movies. God's Not Dead is not a movie where this message is soft-pedaled. It stars Kevin Sorbo, best known as TV's Hercules, and Dean Cain, known as TV's Superman. So there's something interesting about that as well. Maybe just a coincidence. But God's Not Dead is a story about a philosophy professor who is forcing his students to sign a document saying God is dead.
Yeah.
And this one kid refuses to sign it, and he's forced, therefore, to defend his position before the class. And, of course, it becomes a battle of the minds between someone who's well-prepared for this battle and someone who is completely ill-prepared. What do you think about this film, Phil?
Well, I think it sends out a lot of great messages. There was another film called The Genesis Code, and one student couldn't believe in the truth of the Bible, and it was kind of the Bible versus science. And one student was saying, you know, I don't think they're really distanced. I think they're really a part of one another. And it was a very powerful film that could change opinions along the matters of was mm-hmm. the earth actually created by God. And I think the same thing happens in this film, in that it reminds Christians that we need to be prepared. We need to have Bible studies and understand what our faith is all about. Sometimes that's hard to do because you don't want to preach. I'm, as you guys all know, I'm not one to preach at anybody. If somebody's going to ask me a question about my faith, that's one thing. But I try not to bombard anybody with my own personal opinions.
I think it's time, though, for movies to take on what I might call alternative views of what Christianity is all about, because almost daily in the bookstores you will find books about Apostle Paul, for example, new takes on what was he really saying. People like Gary Wills and others are regularly coming out with new books, the Apocrypha, new things are coming to light, where people are reexamining what we think we know about Christianity and how it evolved since Christ's death. And I wish there were more movies, though, that would take on these questions, these alternative views, if you will. I think there's great drama potential there.
Yeah, you bet. Now, let's take a step back, and I know, Phil, you probably take a different take on this, but when you're reviewing a film, can you distance yourself from the message and the intent just to be the film critic and say, this is what's wrong with this movie from a, you know, technical or artistic standpoint?
Well, it's just like I mentioned Jane Fonda's films. I don't always agree with her political take on things, but I can listen to somebody else's opinion. As John said, the first thing I thought was, you know, first of all, there's going to be a lot of people in the Christian arena who are going to disagree with that. But what I like about it is it does cause discussion and debate. And I don't find anything wrong with that. I think people, if they really want to start judging whether or not Christianity is right or wrong, they ought to read the book first.
Well, let's talk critically about God's Not Dead. If you were looking strictly from a film critic's point of view, what would you say about it?
Boy, I wished I had that review in front of me, because we did that a little while ago.
I actually liked
the film, because I liked the debate that was going on there. And it's one evidently that is going on college campuses,
sure,
where people, their professors are saying, look, you know, you better agree with me or your grade is going
to
suffer.
I'd like to know who those professors are. Well, that seems to me completely off the wall.
They named several of them at the end of that.
For an academic professor to pose an opinion, but then have students sign a paper.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've ever seen an example of that kind of transgression.
Well, there is a scroll at the end of the film which talks about all of the cases that are supposedly in the academic world where this film was based upon, mm-hmm. or at least inspired by. I don't know if it was as that blatant as it is in the film, but it certainly was there.
Yeah.
So out of 5 stars, what would you give God's Not Dead, Phil?
Well, technically, I think maybe a 3, but I think the message does cause discussion and debate, so I'd say a 4.
How about, let's say, Son of God, which is based upon the TV miniseries The Bible?
Well, you know, I'm not a real big fan of Jesus movies, simply because it's so hard to get an actor to play a man that is a man and yet he's all God. How do you find somebody with that kind of charisma?
True enough.
It's very, very difficult. I've always appreciated films that dealt with how Jesus affected the lives of other people, such as Ben-Hur, The Robe. I realize The Robe is not a great film, but there are moments in that film where you see the true subject of Christ's effect on people.
I'm glad you mentioned Life of Pi. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is one of the really transcendental experiences, at least I've had in a movie in years.
Well, I absolutely feel that's the purpose of a filmmaker, is to raise the question that we are not just a mental and physical being, but we are a spiritual being.
Are you familiar with the Sherwood Baptist Church? I believe that's the name of the church that's producing a lot of films.
Yeah,
but it's
Courageous. I think Courageous.
And Fireproof, and that have done really well.
The Giants. What was that one, Marie? What was the Giants? Facing the Giants.
Facing the Giants, mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I remember starting to watch that film. Now, this may raise some eyebrows here, but it has such a low budget, and it's technically it had a lot of problems with it. But all of a sudden, I felt the sincerity of it. It really touched me. It was a film that touched me.
Thank you, Phil Boatwright. We could go on and talk about this subject for hours. Very interesting. Maybe we'll readdress this issue another time soon. I want to thank my fellow film critics, Tom Poe and Marie Asner.
Oh,
excuse me. That's what it says there in the list. Sorry about it. John Tibbetts and Marie Asner. Central Standard returns with host Gina Kaufman on Monday with a look at how Yelp is impacting the food scene and chefs here in Kansas City. Stick around for up-to-date following next. Our show was produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Christine Garten. Our announcer is Linda Scher. I'm Russ Simmons. This is Central Standard on KCUR. Enjoy your weekend.